Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast.
Can a straw hat survive punk hazard? We're going to be asking this question and a lot more on today's episode of Systematic Geekology. We are the Priests of the Geeks, continuing on through our One Piece series, going arc by arc. Are we halfway through the story? Only Oda knows. Certainly we don't. So this is a very fun arc. One that TJ and actually we're talking off mic about. We forgot that happened. We met this person. It's one is like, I don't think about that much, but there's a lot that does happen here. But before we head that way, I, of course, am Christian Ashley, your host for the day, joined by, I already said his name, but I mean, you know him, you love him, you want to be him. And if you don't, I mean, I don't know if I want to meet you. TJ Blackwell, how's it going, TJ?
Good, thanks.
Excellent. Always glad to have you here, man. So recently, what have you been geeking out on, TJ?
I've mentioned it on a couple other recent recordings, but I've regressed. I'm getting back into Valorant. It's rough. It's a rough life.
You know what? Sometimes you just got to get back there. It's familiar. You know, you're used to it.
It's just, you know, it's comfortable and awful.
Ah. Has it improved at all since you left it?
Some would say.
Some would say? And would you be some of those people?
Inconclusive.
Ah, okay. Still learning it. That's fine. Yeah. I just watched not too long ago the 2025 The Ritual, which is based on events of an exorcism that happened in the 20s in America. It's pretty well done. I think they handled the faith aspects pretty well. They still go full Hollywood on Catholicism and how they view that. But for the most part, it's pretty faithful to certain events that happened there. So I enjoyed it. Well, now that we've gone through that, it's time to get into some One Piece. And today we're going to be, like as mentioned earlier, inside of the Punk Hazard arc itself. So, TJ, would you like to help me go over what happens in this arc?
This is an incredibly dense arc. Incredibly dense. If you've reached Punk Hazard, you're like halfway caught up. So, there's that. This starts in chapter 655. You know, and it's only 40-something chapters long. So much happens in Punk Hazard. It's absolutely ridiculous. So,
Real quick, before we go any further, I have a question for you. I just happened to think about it. When do you think was the moment Oda realized he needed to put as many things as possible could happen in a chapter so that the anime could do like one episode or one chapter an episode or something like that? Or do you
think that's not close to this?
Because I couldn't fault you if you thought it happened around here, because you're right. This is when it starts getting really dense. There's a lot of dialogue that happens, and not to say it never happened before, but I think around this time in history is when he starts like throwing everything in the kitchen sink in there, just so there's not only he's moving a plot along and characters along, but there's enough to be adapted within an episode or an episode and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. It gets heavy. It feels like reading an actual book if you go back and read Punk Hazard.
Yeah, go read chapter one and go read like the latest chapter that came out. And I guarantee you that there is no wasted space. There are things that are happening and there's dialogue filling up everything else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's gotten It got a little crazy. But Punk Hazard, the arc starts off, we're leaving Fishman Island, going through that still, and it's, you know, them trying to ascend. The log poses, you know, they meet island whales on the way up, and it's Laboon's family. This is, I think, the last time that mentioned Laboon, like 700 chapters ago.
Right.
600 chapters ago. But we see Laboon's family. They play Bing Sasaki. It's cool. It's heartwarming. And those little, you know, in-between arc moments that we get to have. But then they surface, and none of their log poses are pointing towards the island that they surface near. And the ocean's on fire a little bit, and all the fish are dying. And Luffy's like, we'll go there. And they get a, you know, they get a distress call from someone on the island. Luffy's not just crazy. You know, he was trying to help somebody. But then they decide to go to Punk Hazard. And from there, good Lord, it gets busy. We find out Smoker was waiting for them on the other side of the Grand Line and just picked the wrong island. Because, of course, Luffy went to Punk Hazard instead of one of the other three that you're supposed to go to. So he has to do his thing, get over to Punk Hazard to get Luffy. And that's cool. Smoker is in the arc. So is Tsuchigi. Super fun. Like, you know, fan favorite characters. Great to see them in order. It's hard to think about this in order, even just because it all happens so quickly. What happens next? They see dying children.
Is that what happens?
Or they find out about the island.
They find out about the island, I think. Goodness gracious, where are we at?
They split up into two teams.
Yes.
The first team was just supposed to stay on the boat, but of course they can't do that.
Yep. Yeah. When does Law show up?
Law shows up.
It's fairly early. Oh, no, it's...
Yeah, it's pretty soon.
That's when they find the dragon early on, right?
Yeah, because it's dragon first. And that's the first thing that happens. They get through world government big fence, and there's a dragon in there. Just a straight up dragon. I do forget that exists in One Piece. I'm very used to the dragons just being Momonosuke or Kaido. Nope. Dragon, number 13, representing. So they deal with that. Then, I want to say, they meet the giant children.
I think that's when that happens, and the ones that are on the ship get attacked by the people in those, like, weird hazmat kind of suits.
Yeah. Yeah. And then Law shows up. This is hard to summarize for a different reason than other One Piece arcs, just because you would think it would be easier. 46 some chapters,
right?
And there's something happening in every single panel, absolutely every single panel. So broad strokes, they find out Punk Hazard is bad. Caesar Clown is here. He's evil. He's doing bad guy stuff. They ally with Law. Law is now a warlord. Time Skip did him well. He's super cool.
Mm-hmm.
Law fights Smoker. Whatever. They ally with Smoker just to take down Caesar Clown. It's
who is in charge of Punk Hazard. It's kind of like their R&D kind of things. Yeah. Had previously worked for a gentleman known as Dr. Vegapunk, who we've met more recently, spoilers. But now this was the time, it was like we kind of, I don't know if this is the first time he was ever name dropped, but there's a lot of weight that's added by his presence here, Vegapunk. And Caesar, of course, doesn't like him, and in spite of him, made the island the way it is.
Yeah, this is the first time Vegapunk's brought up as like a real character, as opposed to, you know, a boogeyman.
Yeah.
So that's fun. And Punk Hazard does a ton of footwork for the next three arcs, four arcs.
Pretty much.
As a Vegapunk. So during these 40 chapters, we set up for Dressrosa, we set up Whole Cake Island and Wano and Egghead Island. The next four arcs and up to current day were set up by Punk Hazard. And you might be thinking, you said this started in chapter 650, you know, 655. How could the next four arcs be 700 chapters? Well, Dressrosa was like 500, so that's probably why.
It wasn't that much, but it was pretty close.
It was 300 something, I think. Yeah. 380.
We're probably going to have to break that up into multiple episodes.
I'm going to skip it. I'm sitting out. Oh, my goodness. But Punk Hazard's really cool. It's really fun. And it's really dense. Like, if you don't like the pacing of One Piece generally, jump in here. If you're you know, in a One Piece mood and not in the mood to wait for One Piece, watch Punk Hazard. You ain't going to do much waiting. We get introduced to some new villains here. He's the clown we mentioned, Monet, and the other guy, the funny guy. And this is one of the few arcs where, like, they just straight up kill these people.
Right.
Except Caesar Clown. It's like, yeah, out of there, gone forever. Pretty cool, pretty fun.
Yeah, they also end up meeting in separate locations. Kinemon, who is kind of this samurai looking guy, who hails from a place called Wano, and he is presumably with, they call him his son at this point in time. That tells you a little mm-hmm. what you need to know. That's not actually the truth. Momonosuke, who they've also messed with these weird artificial devil fruits that Caesar has been making here that at this point in time can only be used to create artificial Zoan fruits. We learn a little more about devil fruits in general. We'll get to that in a bit. See what else happens here. Oh, one of the big reasons that Law came here to speak to Luffy is like, look, I want to have an alliance with you, which is not like unprecedented in the pirate world. You're supposed to be like your crew versus everyone else. But Law, kind of a more tactical guy, sees the chaos that Luffy brings and sees the power that he and his crew have with such a small crew, by the way, and wants to bring them together because he has higher aspirations, not only to take down some things that are happening in Dressrosa, but also in Wano itself, wanting to go after Kaido, who is in charge of them. So there's this not uneasy alliance. It's more like Luffy, yeah, sure, whatever. I'm in it to win it. But that has huge repercussions for what comes next that leads into the next arc, all because Law has the genius to actually say, maybe we should team up.
Yeah, so they kind of point themselves towards Kaido here, which, post a couple hundred chapters, you go back to and you're like, oh, that's kind of odd. That took a while, didn't it? But that's when it happens. And like you said, we do get introduced to artificial fruits, which opens up the world to smile fruits, which comes back up in Wano. And man, Punk Hazard might be underrated. Hazard might be severely important.
Yeah, and before we had done this episode, I think my rating would have been a lot lower. But actually, like rereading some of the events and remembering, oh, this happened. Oh, we were introduced to this character. Oh, because of this, this is why, 400, 500 chapters later, that's why this character has this motivation. That's why this had to happen. It's gone a little higher in my mind. I'm not sure exactly where I'm going to settle before we end this episode, but it's like, I'm glad I got to go back and reintroduce myself to this arc.
Yeah, a reread of Punk Hazard is a good arc to reread. Yeah, it benefits a lot from the context.
Oh, yes. Yeah, so we get our big confrontation here, between Luffy and Caesar Clown, who's being contracted through all these horrible things for the world government. And essentially, once Luffy actually takes the fight seriously, he's out of the fight for good. They kind of take him prisoner for a bit, which was also kind of part of Law's plan, because he has a larger plan of messing with not only Kaido way later on, but also Doflamingo, who is kind of in contact with Caesar Clown and kind of using him intermediary and all that kind of stuff, and tells him that if he doesn't abdicate the throne, essentially, of Dressrosa, then bad things are going to happen. And that's where it kind of ends, with seemingly Doflamingo giving up at that point in time before we go into the next arc proper.
Mm-hmm. And we'll get rather familiar with him.
Yeah. So, like, just going back, we talked about our thoughts, like, post a second or third-ish time we read these. Like, what were your initial thoughts when you first read Punk Hazard?
Oh, I was amazed. Oh, yeah. There's so much new information in Punk Hazard. And it's really cool. Like, it's just kind of sick. It felt like Oda just kind of unleashed himself onto the page. He was like, well, this is Punk. This is the experimental island. I'm going to put in whatever I want. So he does. And it's sick. And it really, I think, epitomizes the kind of wacky things that can happen in the One Piece world. Like, just as a product of its own world building. And this is just where a lot of the actual world building happens. That's Caesar Clown's job, is to change it. So I liked it a lot. I really did.
I'm glad you said that, because you kind of get the feeling at this point in time, not that like Oda has like tenure in the way that we think of it, but like more in the sense of, I've been here for a while. I've made you money. Trust me. Not that he will never listen to what an editor would say, but you get a little more sense of creative freedom to like put as much of himself as possible into this work. And that's why, things remain goofy and all over the place and chaotic, but also there is a huge sense of order in how he is building up his world and introducing these concepts that we're just learning about, some as a result of the experiments done here, but also the artificial devil fruits that are being made, and how this ties in to greater arcs, like where we're going to Wano and so on and so forth, like that are like it's stuff like that. Some of it's been mentioned before, but now he's building up on what he's already done. And you can tell, like, yeah, he's been wanting to get to some of this stuff. And he introduces a lot of it here. Some would say it's a little too much. I can understand why someone would say that, but I think it's necessary in order to get to where we need to be later on. Like, it has to happen here in what is relatively a short amount of time for a One Piece arc, the 40-some chapters. So my initial first reaction was, man, that was a lot. Can't wait to go to this the next arc. It'll be like, you know, 100 or so chapters. And then I just kind of forgot. Not like everything, but like just bits and pieces of this. And then we go later on and say, oh, okay. Oh, yeah, that's they had the alliance. You know, that's why they're doing this. That's why they're ending up in Wano way later on. Oh, yeah, artificial devil fruits. Oh, yeah, when did that happen? Oh, yeah, Punk Hazard. But now looking back at this, like my second time is, okay, I have a higher appreciation for you and what you're doing with this arc, Odo.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that. Dressrosa has a way to really make you forget what happened before just by sheer virtue of it being so grand.
Yes. I mean, it is a lot. I mean, it's important things have to happen in the next arc, and there's a reason it takes as long as it does, but it can be very draining, shall we say, to get through all of that. And no, it's worth it in the end, but
yeah,
it's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a whole lot. It just, on a binge read or a binge watch, Dressrosa is like trying to jump over the space needle.
So like frame of reference, it feels longer, but it's only 102 chapters and there's 118 episodes of the anime. So that's two-ish years, depending, a little more depending on your like breaks and holidays and Oda taking time off for health. So, yeah, it took a while to get there, but Dressrosa is worth it.
Yeah, it's not that bad. It really is just an anime pacing issue. In the manga, it doesn't feel that bad, and it's, like, never boring.
So. Oh, yeah. You can't accuse this arc or the next one of being boring unless you just don't like large walls of text. And if you don't, like, I think you're just diametrically opposed to what One Piece has become because it needs to have those walls of text now.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a necessary evil.
Yeah. All right. So those are our initial thoughts. Let's go over like just specific moments in here. Is there one in particular like that's my favorite in this arc? And well, why is it your favorite?
That's hard. Punk Hazard has a lot of really cool moments. Law fighting Smoker. The Straw Hat like body swap bit, which is hilarious. Might be that. It might be Frankie and Chopper's body using Monster Point. Because this is the last time we've seen Monster Point up to date.
My gosh, is that true? I mean, that sounds right.
Unless he used it a little bit that I don't remember in Whole Cake. Because I know he didn't use it in Dressrosa.
He didn't use it in Wano, I don't think. You know, I think you may be right.
Yep. This was like the last hurrah to Chopper's old character, pre-time skip. And it's not Chopper, it's Frankie doing Monster Point and losing control. And people being like, oh, man, Chopper's kind of scary.
Yeah.
Yep. Chopper's kind of scary. He used to be.
Not just their pet. That's got like, what? Like, so few berry bounty. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was probably it for me. Monster Point, still super cool. The point system is still cool. Still nice. I like seeing, you know, Arm Point. It's just not Monster Point. Monster Point's the coolest.
Yeah, it's strong. It's a strong choice. Me... I mean, like going over this again, it's like I like from a story point, the idea itself of Law coming and approaching another pirate captain and be like, look, this isn't how it's done, but here's how we're going to do things. We're going to create an alliance of sorts because it benefits to both of us. You don't like them. I don't like them. And I'm going to give you reasons not to like them even more. And that's cool. That's not my actual answer, but like from a world building point of view and a character point of view, I love that idea so much because normally allied pirates are in the same crew in this world and they may branch off from them. Like, you know, Shanks kind of branched off of, you know, Whitebeard and stuff like that. Right. I'm not making that up. Sorry. I just had that moment of going through 1,000+ chapters. And like, did the information I just say, is it true? Oh my gosh.
Sorta?
I think the sorta is the right answer. Goodness gracious. What the series does to a man. But my actual answer is going to be Luffy's fight with Caesar. And like, he's been built up with a great threat, you know, the poisonous gas that is used here around the island, all the things, the terrible things he's done to help promote the world government and give them new ways to kill people and control them. And he thinks he's invincible, not as much as like, you know, Eneru did back way back in the day, but enough to where when Luffy finally gets him in the face and takes the fight seriously, you can see like the will to keep fighting, like slowly like die in Caesar Clown. And it's like, and he's got such a goofy-ish name like that, but Oda builds him up as a threat. He's still a threat, but also he maintains the goofy aspects. Now you're our prisoner, so we're going to use you for this.
Yeah. He's also like realistically not really a threat to Luffy specifically because he's not Magellan.
Yes.
But yeah, I agree. It is a good fight. And Caesar Clown, I think, is a fine villain. A little silly. It for when I was younger, it made me think they were going to set up to do like a big clown alliance with like Caesar and Buggy. That hasn't happened yet.
I'm still waiting on the day that Buggy is revealed to be part of the D family. You know, Buggy D Clown. That's a pun Buggy that only works in English. And Oda definitely isn't thinking that. But yeah, let's just go there. Let's skip ahead. Caesar Clown, like, what do you think of him like as a villain since we've both already brought it up?
He's kind of, when I think about One Piece villains, I put Caesar Clown and Caribou together.
Okay.
Just because they remind me of each other. Like, they don't stick out to me as great villains. They don't stick out to me as horrible villains. Caribou saves himself from being in that horrible villain spot just because he's funny. That is it. If he wasn't funny, he would be bad.
Yeah.
Caesar, though, is, I don't know, it felt like Caesar was out of his depth here. Like, I like Caesar as a foil to Vegapunk if Caesar Clown was involved in Egghead Island.
Mm.
That would have been really interesting. However, not feasible. Didn't happen. So I think he's fine here. It's nice to have, because he does come back, right? Yeah.
Later on, at least in the next arc.
Yeah. And it's just nice to have him here as an obstacle, which is significant, like for everyone but Luffy. Caesar Clown is a problem. which is the case a lot, quite often. And at the time, we were just like, yeah, that's the power of rubber, baby. So I like Caesar Clown. He sets up pretty nicely for Doflamingo. And I think that's really what his job was. So
yeah, I agree. He's never going to be in like the top 25 One Piece villains for me. But you know, you keep going down the list. I mean, surely he makes an appearance. He's enough of a threat to everyone else except for one guy he has to go up against, which is always funny when that happens in this series, because it's nice to see someone who thinks so highly of themselves, wants to create all this devastation in the world, wants to prove himself the better man compared to like the guy he used to work with. And then suddenly out of nowhere, this, you know, guy who's moving up in the pirate world, but he's still not like top dog, comes in and just wrecks your day. And that's what just Luffy does. And it's a great point. Like, there's no right great moment. Yeah. A la, you know, Luffy and Katakuri during their fight, like the will of the two of them and why they do what they do in this fight. But it's still fine. And it does what it sets out to do. And that is, like you said, to help set up for what's happening with Doflamingo in our next arc, too. Because we've had him in the background. We've made appearances, but he hasn't like shown himself in all his power and glory. And okay, so this guy's submissive to him, but that makes him higher than him. So what's he going to be like when they go up against the Straw Hats go up against Doflamingo? Mm-hmm. So do you have a character previously established that kind of stood out the most to you in these arcs?
Aokiji.
Aokiji, yes.
Aokiji.
He and his fight against, goodness gracious.
Akainu.
Akainu, thank you. And kind of the backstory of like why things are the way they are around here to an extent.
Yeah, it's super cool. So, like, you're going through Punk Hazard as an arc, and you're thinking, like, okay, I guess Caesar Clown turned the island into, like, half cold, half hot, you know, wasteland. Nope. That ain't what happened. Aokiji and Akainu fought hard, and they just split this island in half, fire and ice, forever, which is super cool, and then really plays up Aokiji's motivations. Because, you know, you can see, like, killing Fire Fist Ace, so he wasn't really okay with that. He's like, this is, I feel like that was cruel, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And he changes his alliance. He leaves the Marines. He leaves Workov. And bites Akainu a little bit. So we get to see that, and that's just so cool. That's really cool. That might be my favorite moment from the arc.
That's a good one.
Might be. And it also like lets us understand just how strong they are.
Oh yeah, that this is still happening after the fight.
They were that strong when Luffy went and tried to fight them.
How long is this time skip? 2 years?
2 years.
Yeah, and it's still like this.
Yeah.
That's pretty metal.
Yeah, it's tough. It's awesome.
Yeah. I think I'm gonna go with Law for mine. Once again, just building off of what I said earlier, it's like he's destroying the status quo. And once again, the status quo is I have my crew, you have your crew, we'll fight or go over these different territories and whatnot, but we're never going to be friends. We're not going to be friendly to each other. And they're not friends at the end of this arc, but they've established an alliance, even with Smoker to an extent, temporary for this arc, as it were. And we'll get to that later on. But to have the resolve to do that because you know you're not good enough and you want to be good enough means having to let go a little bit of your pride to do something that no one else would want to do. I really appreciate that from a character standpoint, because it's nice to have someone who recognizes when they're competent and when they're not good enough and when they need help and they're willing to ask for that help in their own way. It's not like he's like, I'm so happy I'm making this decision. I want to be friends with everyone. It's like, no, we're going to serve each other. You're going to get what you want. I want to get what I want. And we're going to get a good result out of this if we work together. And, you know, the fights that he has here, you know, messing with the crew a little bit with his Devil Fruit ability is pretty fun. I mean, outside of, you know, the normal, you know, Sanji shenanigans, I don't really care much for. But that's to be expected when it happened to how it happened. But yeah, right. That's my pick.
Yep, his dream come true, you know.
I mean, honestly. So do you have any, like, character that was introduced in this arc that was the most interesting to you?
I thought Monet was interesting. Mm-hmm. She doesn't have a whole lot of growth. I think she was just a cool villain. Because, you know, spoiler alert, she dies. Mm. I already said that earlier, but if you missed it, you're not missing it this time. She's dead.
Which is weird for a One Piece villain.
Which is weird. And they do the same thing, and I don't even remember the dude's name, but he was pretty funny.
Yeah, I can't remember his name either.
Someone would just get stuff stuck to his face. That's funny. That's a good visual gag.
Yeah, someone's screaming at us the name, and I'm not going to look it up.
Yeah, it's something.
Yeah. I'm kind of partial to Momonosuke a little bit. He's not like a favorite character by any stretch of the imagination, but what he brings into this arc is like this weird ability that he has now, thanks to like the Devil Fruit and the mystery of like, okay, are you from Wano? Are you like, is this guy actually your dad? What's going on there? And his interactions with the crew are pretty fun. So like that, setting up a mystery like him is in this arc. I think I really appreciated him and what they did there. It's like even today, he's not in like my top 50 characters of One Piece, but you know, it's the, what he introduces here in this arc is kind of important to me. So that's why I'll say him.
Yeah. That's probably a better answer.
All right.
Realistically.
So like, what do we learn in this arc about what the world government has been doing using the discoveries, like manufactured and discovered in Punk Hazard?
Everything. they just, most of the things they used to try and dominate the world island by island, it started here, and they're still working on new stuff, new evil stuff. And where, you know, the great tragedy of Wano, the Smile Fruit, this is where that started. Pretty much all of the atrocities the world government commits started here. And we get told that pretty blatantly.
When you have an amoral guy like Caesar Clown around, like going beyond the natural, going to ways to like, okay, we're going to get to Devil Fruits in a moment, what we learn a little about them, but how he goes beyond that and the cost it takes on the person and how it is unnatural for this to occur in the world, because that is supposed to be like this almost reincarnation, as it were, for Devil Fruits to show up. And then of course all the ways that he's kind of messed with the pacifistas and his own Devil Fruit, his own abilities there. And then just being willing to do whatever, because it means it makes him superior, because they care about what he does, therefore it must be right.
Yeah. What else? Pacifistas, Smile Fruits, they do a lot of human experimentation on Punk
Hazard. Giant children.
Yeah. The giant children, which was foreshadowing.
Uh-huh.
Which was foreshadowing. We know that now. So five. It's five arcs that that Punk Hazard sets up. I wasn't even thinking about that. Maybe six. We'll see. What else happens in Punk Hazard? We need to like comb through it and see what the next arc is going to be about.
I mean, at this point, why not?
Yeah, Monet's going to come back. Law betrays Luffy. Next arc. We'll see what happens.
Okay. So like going to the Devil Fruit side of things, we learn that, you know, some things about them, both the real Devil Fruits in the world and any artificial ones, which can only be made into Zoan Fruits at this point in time of his research. Like, what specifically do we learn about them? And like, what are the lore implications of this?
So Punk Hazard is where we find out that Devil Fruits can be created. And we'd been exposed to one, I think one, you know, technically before the review, we're exposed to a couple. But we also learn, I want to say that this is where we find out that all the Devil Fruits were originally from the same tree.
I think that's right.
Was that Punk Hazard? And it's really just all of the hard info we've gotten on Devil Fruits was in Punk Hazard.
Right.
Because it was dense. Really info-rich arc. They were like, well, we want to explain this thing. We're going to explain it a little bit now.
And then they go into the ideas like, look, because you're thinking like, well, why don't people just cultivate these fruits? Well, it's only one at a time. And when that person who eats a devil fruit dies, the closest fruit next to it essentially becomes like the reincarnation of that fruit. And
yeah, which is really funny,
right? It's like, oh,
like you got to think Blackbeard is just walking around on his ship with a few crates of fruit.
That would make perfect sense for a guy like him. Yeah. Okay.
Like Blackbeard's probably always just got an apple in his pocket.
I mean, if he doesn't, I mean, it's canon now. Like, a guy like him, as smart as he is, wanting to do the things that he's doing, and we're still figuring those out, even with the great reveal we just had last chapter about his parentage. Yeah, I could definitely see him doing that now that you say it. But the implications of this, yeah, if I remember correctly, I think this is it. This is where we learn that they came from one tree and it came out. So there's a little bit of, you know, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil kind of aspects there. Not completely, it's not a one-to-one, but the idea of, you know, being imbued with something because you ate it from the specific tree. And then, like, okay, well, what does this mean? Like, does the world government know this? Is that how they plan to make sure that they're going to get specific people to eat specific devil fruits because they kill the right person and they have fruit nearby, so that we'll go jump to that one? And then, of course, you got to figure out, well, how did some of these people, how did Luffy get his fruit? Like, I mean, we know a little bit now, more is revealed later. So, like, the implications of what is brought up here are huge for the rest of the series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Another thing, as previously mentioned, that's kind of super important is Luffy allying with Trafalgar Law. So, like, TJ, what do you think? What does this mean for what happens in the story? And what are your thoughts on it?
I think it's awesome. This is the start of the Grand Fleet. And it just shows that Law is not like other pirates in a similar way to Luffy. Like they really are similar people, and maybe Law could have been the protagonist of One Piece. Who knows? But it shows that he's willing to not only break boundaries, but only that he's smart enough to be able to tell who's going to break those with him.
Right. You raise a good point. I mean, you would think on paper, there's no way this should happen. Law's far more serious. Luffy's far more chaotic. But when you actually look at it objectively, I mean, who would you rather have working with you right here? Are you going to trust Buggy? You're going to trust Kid? Not happening.
Not happening.
But this Luffy guy, maybe. And it ends up working in their favor. So yeah. It's a bold plan, and I'm glad they do it. And another thing that happens here is that they do end up allying with Smoker, who is learning a little more about the atrocities of the world government and what they've done. And he himself is one of those people like, you know, Garp, who works, you know, in the military to bring peace to the world, but doesn't like when the government oversteps its bounds, kind of like we had a previous episode discussion part of that. So, like, what do you think about the alliance of Smoker and what that means for the rest of the story?
I think it's cool. It's one of the things that really endears the audience to Smoker, that he's not just a Marine, like, he's a real character with his own, like, morality that can be waylaid against the world government. Also, he's awesome, and he smokes more now.
Do you think he does that despite the 4Kids dub? Do you think he even knew?
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely intentionally. Super intentionally. We also get to see him in, I think his nicotine resistance just went up because when he's in Tashigi's body, he goes back to one cigar at a time. So like he's just doing it out of necessity.
Yeah. I enjoy what they do with Smoker here because you could easily have, you know, because he's supposed to be an antagonist for the story and that he is working against what pirates normally do. But he's still a moral man at heart. He's still someone who cares about his crew, who wants good for the people that he's supposed to protect. And being forced into situations like this with Law and Luffy and their crews is super important for him growing as a person and realize, okay, well, maybe these pirates aren't as bad as, you know, I want to think, because that makes the job a little simpler. And, you know, along the way, I'm sure this will bear, you know, fruit, as it were, for whenever they meet up next, however many chapters from now that'll take to happen. So yeah, I'm all in it. I mean, let Oda cook, and Oda cooked pretty well in this arc.
Sometimes I think he consulted on Shokugeki no Soma. These are delicious.
Right? Some good food. All right. So we're about to end our discussion here today with this. But for our special supporters on Patreon and Captivate, we do have a bonus question for you. And that's the question we're going to ask ourselves. If we had an artificial Zoan made for us, what kind would it be? What abilities would it have and why? So be thinking about that, TJ, before we head to the end here. So anything else before we head to our actual rating and reviewing before you want to talk about?
Punk Hazard is pretty quick, unless you're watching the anime. A blanket statement here. If I'm saying catch up on anything in One Piece, I do not mean watch the anime. That's not what I'm talking about. Read it, read it, read it. You can pay three. It's about to be four, which is going to be awful. But Shonen Jump app is $3 a month until August. So, I mean,
considering all that you get, that's a bargain.
Oh, yeah, it's still super worth it. Yeah, I got the notification today and I was like, oh, man, that stinks. It's $4. Of course I'm going to pay $4 for that.
Right? I get to read everything.
Yeah, it's awesome. But definitely, definitely, if you want to know more about the horrible things that the world government does and learns and the intricacies of the Straw Hat body swap, which we didn't touch on too heavily, but was really, really funny, just read it. It's so worth it. 47 chapters, 46 chapters.
It's about. Yeah. So rating and reviewing, what do you think out of 10?
Oh, it's really strong. It is really strong. Just thinking about it, I don't think any arc in One Piece deserves less than a 5. And I don't think any canon arc in One Piece deserves less than a 7.
Okay.
Probably. I'll go through like the arc list and establish that strongly. But I would give Punk Hazard a really strong 8.
Okay. Like,
Punk Hazard is really interesting. There's a whole lot going on. It's very exciting. Punk Hazard is, you know, it's there. All it's really missing is like there are better choreographed fights in One Piece.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of them. Because Smoker and Law is really, really good. But man, the only thing that's really missing is like Poneglyph. There's no ancient weapon here. Some of the bigger villains. If Big Mom or Kaido or any of them were like on Punk Hazard, this might be a 10.
Yeah, I think if you'd asked me before actually, you know, going over this again for the second time, I would have said maybe like a 5.5. But like rereading this, yeah, I'm giving it a 7.5. It's not the strongest arc, but it is one that builds up a lot of what happens next. And as someone who loves his world building, I can't live without this arc. It still doesn't excite me as other arcs do. I think a far better paced or far better fights and character explorations. But you know what? I think a 7.5 is fine.
Yeah. Just like re-experiencing this, it just stuck out to me. It's like heavily underrated.
Yeah.
Just because like it is fast and man, is it important.
Mm-hmm.
This is world builder's delight. You can't turn this down.
Oh, absolutely. So, TJ, do you have any recommendations for the audience?
I had a couple in my mind earlier. I forgot all of them. So what I'm going to say is Superman came out recently. Mm-hmm. And Spotify has the Superman official playlist, which, you know, James Gunn, or one of the ways he builds characters is by curating playlists that he thinks they would listen to and listening to those. So he's partnered with Spotify to make the playlist, and he's got, you know, a bunch of the characters from Superman and the playlist that he curated for them. And when you click on it, it assigns you a character based on your music taste. It's a little weird because it doesn't just like give you that one playlist. The official playlist just has all of them in there and it's like 12 hours long. So the picture, the cover photo changes to the one that you match with the most. And then you just scroll down and you listen to that one. Super cool. Check it out. It's okay. Really nice. It's really sweet. I got Mr. Terrific.
Oh, that's so, even better.
Yeah, I've been listening to it, and it's pretty, like, yeah, I do listen to most of these.
Yeah. So I'm, like, in between games right now, trying not to buy anything, because, you know, money and trying to find a job. So I was just going through, since I already have the PlayStation Network stuff I bought for the year, and just going alphabetically, I've played a couple games. Now I just finished Ark the Lad, Twilight of the Spirits, and it was pretty good. I mean, it's an older RPG, obviously, so there's going to be some quality of life features that aren't in more modern games, and that's fine, because it came out when it did. So I did really enjoy the story. It was fun. So yeah, thank you guys for all that you do. We really appreciate the help, whether it be financially, you can give through Patreon or Captivate. Where if you give $3 or more, we do want to shout out your name. And here's a couple of our wonderful patrons and supporters that we want to shout out real quick. Russell Gentry, Justin Vaughn, Annette Knoll, and Jeannie Mattingly. You guys are the best. If you want to reach out to us, go to Systematic Ecology. Goodness gracious, at gmail.com. Why do I open my mouth and I didn't have that written down? You know what? It's fine. We're here. We're going to finish. We'll do it live. But remember, we're all a chosen people, a geekdom of freaks.
Hey guys, again, thank you so much for listening to our show and being part of the Systematic Geekology team. If you want to support our team, you can do so by going to Captivate. And I know most people don't listen on Captivate, but it's in the description wherever you're listening. You can go to our website. At the very bottom, you have the options to either subscribe and you'll get some extra content and fun stuff, like our bonus questions, all those kind of things that hopefully you all come to love as much as I love making them with our fellow geekologists on the team. We also are hoping to do some future D&D campaigns, stuff like that, and all that's available for our sponsors. But if you don't have those extra funds and you're not really into the subscription thing, you can also leave a one-time tip, just one-time thing to help out our show as we kind of stay in the game with podcasting, keep relevant with all the technology and all that stuff. And it costs a lot to run a show, and we appreciate you for your help. Again, thank you so much for listening. We value your time, and it means a lot to us that you give us your time by listening to our show and supporting us in that way. If you feel led to support financially as well, we appreciate that. Let's get back to the show.
Hello, Systematic Ecology listeners. This is Kevin here. Just want to give a brief ad for some of the other podcasts in our Anazal podcast network. First of all, off is Let Nothing Move You by Christian Ashley, in which Christian goes through the Bible one chapter at a time and gives his thoughts there. There is also the Bible After Hours, which is a more progressive take on the Bible that tries to challenge the status quo with satire and looks at theology. The host uses the pseudonym, the Foulmouth Preacher. And as a bonus, Joshua Knoll does the voices for this one. So definitely check that one out. And also, And We'll Laugh About That Later is the newest podcast that our own Will Rose is starting, where he will interview friends about a story they had that wasn't funny at the time, but that they laugh about now. So definitely check out these shows and subscribe to us wherever you get your pods. Thank you very much.